Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. I think today is going to be one of those shows that, there's so many things going on that I'm going to try to do a little mashup of important topics that I think people need to know. One of the things that's been huge in the news, and it, well, at least in alternative news, has been the fact that the vaccines have, that there's been a lot of information that's come out about what's going into the vaccines. This is the time of year where there's a big push for the flu vaccine. And I just, again, want people to really be aware of what they're putting into their bodies. It should always be about choice. And, you know, tonight the presidential debate is coming on. And I think, for me, one of the things that I'm looking at in terms of which candidate sticks out for me as a person that I would consider or not consider, one of the things that is important is the mandatory mandatory vaccine push. I think that's one of the most important issues that we as Americans need to pay attention to, because it's about health freedom. And if you don't have the ability to know what's going into your body or to choose what goes into your body, then everything else is null. I mean, what are they going to decide that you can't have a job because you're not taking a vaccine, or your child can't go to school? Well, God forbid, they could actually start to become a lot more mercenary about it. And, you know, you could become an enemy of not the state per se, but if you're putting anybody else at risk, you could be deemed a problem and then dealt with accordingly. So this is a slippery slope. And we need to hold our ground, stand our ground in terms of choice. I don't know, Dave, do you take the vaccine? I don't know if you do or not, for flu or anything like that.
No, I do not.
And have you had any push from your doctor to try to coerce you into doing that?
Well, I've not really. He has pushed in the past the vaccine a little bit, but knows that I'm pretty anti-vaccine. He's also pushed the shingles vaccine, which I have not done either. So I think by osmosis or by friendship or by just longevity, you have influenced me greatly, to say the least, as far as vaccines are concerned. So, no, I don't take them.
Well, I'm happy for you. That vaccine for the shingles virus, I still don't understand how that works, because the commercial is so vague. It talks about if you've ever had chickenpox, that you're at high risk to have shingles, which is basically a reactivation or reawakening of the virus. Usually, it happens when the immune system takes some sort of dip, and senior citizens are more at risk because it's technically, and most likely, and most often, their immune systems are not as robust for many reasons. And I think vaccines are one of those reasons, actually. On my Facebook page, there's actually a link to an excellent article that is a consortium just puts together, in black and white terms, a list of the studies that have been, that have proven whether vaccines are safe, et cetera. And it's just no political bent to it at all. But it's about two pages, single-spaced, of all the things that's been linked with autism, I'm sorry, with vaccines. And there are 44 studies that link the mercury, which is called thimerosal, found in lots of vaccines, to autism. There's over 100 studies that are showing a vaccine autism link in general. So when people, you know, pronounce that there's no proof, it's a complete fabrication. I think that one of the things that can make people a lot more efficient at sniffing out BS is when someone says that it's all or none. Nothing is 100%. So when they start to use those kind of that hyperbole, that language, because they want to coerce you into doing something, nothing is 100%. There's no medication that works 100% of the time. I mean, that's the truth, right? So discernment, I think, we're living in an age where discernment is becoming extremely important. Another, let's go to the opposite. They list both pro and con studies. So if there's 100 studies that show an autism link, there's only 14 that show no vaccine autism link. So the preponderance of the evidence, technically, is toward a possible link between autism and vaccine use. We can't deny the fact that the rate of autism has gone through the roof. In 1980s, it was 1 in 10,000 children. Now it's 1 in 68. And I read an article that said that it was expected to be 1 in 2, 50%, within the next 15, 20 years. But how can that possibly be? You know, there's something going on. The only thing, one of the major things that, at least in my opinion, makes you soon stand up and take notice is the number of vaccines that children are getting. I know when I was a kid, I remember getting maybe two. Wait, one was for the smallpox and maybe tetanus or something. But I didn't get the MMR. I didn't get any of the other stuff. I just got their childhood illnesses. And, you know, there's an argument to be made where you have to show your immune system has to be challenged when you're a child so that it becomes robust. If you take away the immune system's chance to actually mount responses, to have memory cells of what you were sick, what you got infected by in order to protect you down the road, then your immune system really is not very robust at all. It can't mount responses. The vaccines don't last. And one of the things that we talked about on the show before is that if you get sick with mumps, measles, any kind of viral process, you will have immune cells that remember that fact, and they'll produce antibodies, which last for a lifetime. When you take a vaccine, that's not the case. And some patients, and I think about 8% of children, don't even mount an antibody response to the mumps, measles vaccine at all. So you just put them at risk with the additives, like the thimerosal, but they're not even protected. And the other piece of the puzzle, which, again, does not get talked about, and here again, it's one of these cause reaction problem solutions. Nobody thinks about what brought on the problem. They're just talking about everybody needs to do it. These vaccines are not dead. They're attenuated, meaning that the virus is still alive, but it's been weakened. Well, that's why you shouldn't take the flu shot mist, you know, in your nose, because that's a flu virus that's still partially active. If you have an autoimmune problem, if you have cancer, if you have HIV, if you have any kind of immune deficiency, those are the and children, for that matter, should not be taking these types of vaccines. And the mumps, measles, rubella vaccine is one of those. And it makes perfect sense. If you think about if you paid attention to what happened in Disney, an article talked about how there was an outbreak of measles, but it really didn't highlight the fact that a preponderance, a fair amount of people who got it had already been vaccinated. Like, they just don't mention that fact. So basically what happens is when you get that kind of vaccine, you're infectious. They should tell people, don't go to school, stay away from people after you get the vaccine, because you can actually spread it. And that's exactly what happened. So we're having this statement that everybody needs to be vaccinated because it's a rampant, disease is rampant. Well, part of it's because people have been vaccinated and the kids are going to school and spreading it amongst themselves. You know, if a parent has never had it and they were vaccinated, they can get it from their child who's vaccinated. So, I mean, we need to be honest about, we need to be vigilant. I think the vaccine industry needs to be honest. But this is a bigger picture. It didn't just come to pass. I remember in the 80s, before 1986, before the law was passed, that that held vaccine companies harmless for any bad result. So if a patient took a shot and they died, you could not sue the vaccine company. That was the precipice that was passed or jumped over between them not making any vaccines because it wasn't cost. They couldn't make any money on it. So over almost 200 vaccines now in the pipeline to come out. Once we let these guys decide that they can force anybody to do a vaccine, the 200 and some odd vaccines in the pipeline are next. And what are they going to be about? Some of them are so you can stop smoking, so you can't get angry. They can actually change your genetic DNA because they're recombinant vaccines. So they have other bacterial genes and God knows what in them that once you take them can be incorporated into your DNA, changing it forever, passing along from generation to generation without any testing really going on. That's where we're going. I mean, if you think about things, that's pretty frightening, don't you think?
It is beyond frightening, as a matter of fact. But I think it's just part, this sounds very conspiratorial, but I think it's just part of a bigger plan of control.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you can't control your own body, you can't control your own genetic existence, then you don't have it. You're a slave, technically. I mean, let's distill it. You're supposed to be able to, if you only have yourself, right? If somebody else is deciding what happens to your body in any form, then that's tyranny in its classic sense, is it not? Under the guise of we love you, we want everybody to be healthy. And the whole mentality of herd immunity doesn't make any sense in the way it's being practiced. Technically, the mindset is if you vaccinate a certain percentage of the population, they protect the population overall from getting sick, right? That was the theory behind it. Also, I think about 90% of our population is vaccinated. What's the point of trying, come hell or high water, to vaccinate the other 10%? Should matter, should it? And for those people, if they wanted to get measles, mumps, chickenpox, then so be it. First of all, these aren't deadly diseases for the most part. Nobody really dies of measles or mumps, right? So the risk-benefit ratio of someone getting autism or dying from or encephalitis, which is inflammation of the brain, having a bad outcome as opposed to being sick for a couple of weeks and being protected forever once you recover, what's the benefit-risk ratio? That's what people need to start asking themselves, ask their doctor, and make a conscious decision. If you say you want a vaccine, so be it. It's the choice aspect. That's what I really always harp on, is the fact that if you don't have choice, you have nothing. Same thing goes with the healthcare system. If you don't have choice on what insurance model you pick, on what doctor you see, on what medicines you want to take, then what the heck's the point? You know? I mean, it's just do what you're told. Go along, get along. If it has a bad outcome, oh, well, that's the mentality. It's just not right. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, I think the thesis of today's discussion is really about the importance, power of choice. As soon as your choice is taken away, it goes downhill very quickly. I know that we talk about on the show a lot of things about the healthcare industry, about Obamacare, et cetera. But that's just a symptom. That is only 1/6 of the economy, but it's going the same way as other pillars of our society. Just think about banking industry. Remember when they crashed, all that stuff happened with
Morgan
bailed
Stanley's
out the banks.
Yeah.
And during that time, this is what I thought personally. If all that stuff had come to pass and everybody was foreclosing and everything was going out to the pasture, right? What would have been an easy thing to do would have been to have the banks write off or write down everybody's debt. You know, okay, we're taking $50,000 off your mortgage, just across the board. We're going to take a loss. We're going to take a hit. A lot of people would have kept their homes. They would have, the economy wouldn't have gone south like it did. And everybody would have had some skin in the game because the banks robbed people in the first place, giving people mortgages that they knew they couldn't afford. So they needed to take a hit on that as well. That's not what happened. They got this, you know, $400 billion, I can't remember how much it was, dollars. They promised to actually spread it through the economy. What they actually did was continue to kick people out of their homes, put this money in a pot, refused to lend it out, made themselves richer, and it screwed the entire economy. Then they made sure that the other banks, independent banks, community banks, they all, most of them closed, and they got rid of their competition. Now you have about three banks left. You know, what is it? Chase, what do you call it? Citibank. I guess that's Chase, right? Bank of America, and what's one with the stagecoach? I'm throwing a blank on it.
Wells Fargo.
Thank you. I mean, that's pretty much it. SunTrust is kind of there, but it's not really part of that group. Same thing happens in medicine. We're looking now at the insurance companies on the verge of becoming the big three. When I first opened my practice, there were so many insurance companies, we had to have two pages to list all the insurances that we were accepting. That's gone. So we've had loss of, closure of, buyouts of all these insurance companies. Now we're coming down to Aetna, Cigna, United Healthcare, Blue Cross Blue Shield. I think Humana still exists. What they want to do is have Aetna buy Humana and Blue Cross buy Cigna. If that comes to pass, medicine as we know it, but as we think we know it, will further go down the toilet. It's another flush, a bigger one. Because when they decide that they're going to become too big to fail, which they already are, you know, face it, the government is paying them subsidies. They're paying them whether or not they lose money, which that's a total never happened. And they're running a complete closed system that's getting money from the patient, from the government. They get to decide what gets covered. It's like an internal medical board within these insurance companies that arbitrarily decides, oh, we're going to cover some medicine 1 week. We're going to cover a procedure this week, and no, next week we're not going to cover it anymore. It's not medically necessary all of a sudden. Or it is experimental now, and nobody gets to argue this. You can't even take it up the chain because you just get a denial, firm, not doing it. That's only going to get worse. When they don't have competition, when they're all thinking the same monolithic way, all you're probably going to have them do is go regional, right? So maybe Blue Cross will cover the Northeast. Maybe Aetna will cover the Southeast. Maybe, you know, they'll just carve out a fiefdom. You won't even get to choose more than one insurance company on your plan. There's only going to be one. That is when you're totally screwed. And they will get to decide how much, will continue to get to decide, I should say, how much you're going to have to pay out of pocket for the privilege of them saying no. Health savings account, so what? I'm done with that health savings account argument as well. Until they unhook health savings accounts from the administration by the insurance company, they are null and void. I said it before, I will say it again so people get this. Health savings accounts are technically monies that you save. Sometimes your employer will kick in, you know, match you, and you're supposed to have a pretty decent amount of money at the end of the year or during the year that you can use to get your health care done, your health care needs done. Well, if you could get whatever you wanted with it, that'd be awesome. If you can go and use it for supplements, or you can use it to buy toothpaste, or you can use it to get dental work, whatever you wanted to do, you should be able to do it. But in actuality, once you go to see a doctor and they have an issue, they want to send you for a test, the doctor has to ask permission from the insurance company for whatever you want done. If the insurance company says no, like I just described, it's not covered, it's experimental, we're not doing it, You can't just say, okay, forget the insurance company. I'm going to pay out of my using my health savings account. It doesn't work that way. You can't. So the insurance company becomes judge, jury, and administrator of your hard-earned money. Not only the premiums that you're paying, but your block box, your pot of money that you want to do what you want to do with. That's ridiculous. But we're being told that that's a great thing. We need more of that. That means your money is completely locked up in a way that you can't use it. That's just another tax, technically, and a private one to the insurance company. I don't think they use your money, you know, but you can't use your money. Isn't that the point of a health savings account?
You know, it's what has transpired has been absolutely incredible. And, you know, your relationship with Liberty HealthShare, that's the only way out that I see.
I think it's one of the easiest ways out. I don't subscribe to there's only one way to do stuff because everybody's different. We're having a debate a little bit about direct primary care practices and whether you can use or should use something like Liberty HealthShare versus going down the insurance pathway to help support yourself if you have something that's not routine. I personally think, because I've looked at both, Liberty HealthShare model is a lot more user-friendly. It certainly is cheaper. And because it's not insurance, that's the power of it. It doesn't lock you into these mandates. It doesn't lock you into having your privacy sacrificed on the altar of the electronic medical record. It certainly becomes more about what you and your doctor decide. It's no longer about cost. Because cost is the thing that drives healthcare now, and people deny themselves or get denied. And this is a two-edged sword here. Let's say the insurance company says you can have something done. If you're out of pocket, it's $7,000, $10,000. You just stopped yourself from getting whatever you need to get done because you can't afford it. You spent $400, $500 or more per month in premiums. Maybe had you been able to put that in the bank or in your own personal account so that you could pay that $7,000 deductible, then things would be different. But this money just goes into a black hole to be never seen again. And on top of that, you have to pony up more money, which I don't know how people do, frankly. Well, they don't. It's increasingly harder to get anything done. And that's why, it's a kind of a dual conversation we're having, but that's why the direct primary care and direct pay cash practices are thriving. I think all people need to understand and know is that they exist and that they offer a different standard of care. Standard of care is so poor now, it'll make your head spin. I mean, I've heard things that my mouth hangs open when people come in and tell me what their experience was in the hospital, in the ER. It's a disaster. There is no care being given anymore. Unless they're going to vaccinate you, they're all hot to do that. They're not hot anymore to treat you if you have a chronic medical problem, if you have multiple medical problems, if you're over a certain age, if you don't have money. I mean, I'm going to give you an example, which is really nauseating. Somebody had a heart attack. A young woman had a heart attack. She went to the ER. They treated her to diagnose the heart attack, and they, quote, stabilized her. They admitted her to the hospital. And instead of calling a cardiology consult, because the next stage after you've stabilized somebody, is to have a cardiology consult, maybe get a catheterization, find out how many arteries are affected, maybe get treated before it happens again, right? So she's sitting in her hospital bed waiting for the cardiology consult. Instead, a case manager shows up and says, well, you're going to be discharged. You're stable, so we don't have to treat you anymore. You're going to be discharged now. And the reason that happened is because she doesn't have insurance. Now, normally in the old days, what would have happened if you didn't have insurance, social worker would come in and they would get you on emergency Medicaid. Totally appropriate. You have a potentially life-threatening illness. you don't have insurance. That's the whole point of Medicaid. It's to help you when you don't have the means to help yourself. In this new system, you don't have Obamacare, you're not covered. We treated you. Our diagnostic-related group number says we need to get you out on day one before you start making us lose money. See you. No follow-up. No consultation with a cardiologist. She's yet to see a cardiologist as an outpatient. Just give her some aspirin and send her out the door. That's health care in the United States at this point. If you stay in the hospital system, if you continue to use your insurance card and hope for the best. The parallel system is a cash-based system. I'll tell you another story. A friend of mine had an orthopedic problem. She decided to go to a cash-only orthopedic doctor who I definitely want to get on my show. I had another coworker who had issues with her knees, and she's still paying off the orthopod, and it's been about 5 years because the bills just keep coming. My friend paid $300 for the initial consult, which included x-rays and the cortisone injection. That's about, a third of what she would have paid, or maybe even less than what she would have paid going through her insurance in a standard practice. That is the difference. She was happy. He spent the time to talk with her. She got excellent care. She didn't have to keep coming back because they wanted to make another copay. That's the difference, folks. If you decide you want to take control of your own pocketbook, you have to seek out these practices now. There is no choice. You know, I mean, this is what I'm talking about. It's black and white. It's day and night. It's not subtle anymore. I hope no one gets sick and has to figure out what I'm saying is the truth, but they can make conscious decisions now, cut it off at the pass. You know, be prepared. Your pocketbook, your mental state, everything that you need to have intact remains so. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwanted influence by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic process.
The War State by Michael Swanson is a must-read for anyone interested in the critical 20 years after World War II, when the United States morphed from a constitutional republic to a global imperial superpower. Get The War State by Michael Swanson from Amazon.com today.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I think I was just talking with Dave in the break about watching the debate tonight or not. And I probably will end up watching. It's kind of a sideshow. But I just read an article about Donald Trump talking about his version of healthcare. And he's talking about privatizing it and using free market to let the system work. If only that were the case, that would be awesome, because that's what will fix the system. If these hospitals are charging, and I'm sorry, I have to digress one more time, because the cost of healthcare is a mantra on my show. Anybody who listens to my show should be able to say this in their sleep. It's not driven by doctors. It's driven by the hospitals, the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical industry. And I got a brilliant example of that from a patient that came to see me last week. I operated on him about 2010, and for some reason he ran across the bill from the hospital. So he decided to bring it in because he thought, I don't know what he thought, but it wasn't my bill, right? So I did a septum surgery, and they charged him $23,000 for the septum surgery. I got paid $600, okay, as a doctor doing the case. And my eyes almost popped out of my head when I was looking at the itemized list of the charges. It was incredible. And I know some of these costs because I have an office and I do surgeries in my office. And I have to buy some of the same equipment. And I'm a solo practitioner, so I know I don't get the same discount as a hospital would. For example, there's a special instrument that you use to take tonsils out or to shrink the size of tissue in the nose called a turbinate. And the wand costs $150. The hospital billed $635 for something that was $150 twice, right? Because I think he had to use the one for the turbinate and for tonsil. So they double billed, basically. Then I looked at the amount for the IV fluid. IV fluid is about $1.50 a bag. They charged $63 for IV fluid. I mean, the list went on, Dave. It was thousands of percent above what the actual cost of the item was. And everything from the syringe to the gels used to put into the nose at the case, everything was marked up. So what should have cost in an outpatient center about $2,500 was $23,000. And again, buyer beware. If you go for a surgery, you want to watch where you have that surgery done because the cost of the surgery changes dramatically on if it's a hospital-based center or if it's freestanding independent center. They're completely different pricing.
And yet the freestanding are being put out of business by the hospitals.
Absolutely, because the hospitals have gone to the legislatures and said, we can't stay open with the competition. It's not fair. And I can tell you that it happened to us in Georgia when the private surgery centers were put out of business when you weren't allowed to build anymore because of something called a certificate of need. The hospital said they'll be put out of business if any more private surgery centers open because it's not fair. Because they knew that they were not going to charge as much, and people they knew would flock to them, and they'd have to lower their price. The market only works if there's competition. If the hospitals know there aren't any surgery centers, and for me, I went from being able to take people to three different surgery centers in my area where I practice to one, and the rest are owned by hospitals or they've been closed by the hospital. One hospital bought one and then closed it after the fact. This is mercenary. They want to be monopolies. They want to be the only game in town, and when they get that status, you're hosed. You're not going to lower the price. You're not going to have sales, you know, President Day sales on hospital admissions or whatever. They're going to jack up the price. And because you've got nowhere to go, you've got nowhere to go. And the way the insurance model's working, they're going to want to keep you out of that hospital as much as they possibly can. Telemedicine, call in a prescription, anything but get you into the office or the hospital to treat you, because every time a patient comes in, they stay and get treated appropriately. Hospital's going to lose money. So they're going to get you in, stabilize you, and triage you back home to your medical home or to a hospice. You're not going to sit there and get care. I mean, this is what it is. So it's really, really, I cannot stress it enough. You have to be consumers of your health care. And it starts with you. If you as a patient decide that you just want to have the lowest common denominator physician, but you don't, because you don't care how much you're paying, or you just have a copay, I'm just going to do me. God forbid you really need the system to work for you. I can tell you it probably is going to let you down in ways that you haven't even imagined yet. And maybe you just have a copay or low deductible. they'll get you in what's covered by saying it's not necessary or it's not coverable or it's not, you know, it's experimental. They'll get you in some way.
The medicine that
you desperately need is not on the formulary. Something's going to happen to wake you up to the fact that you can't have what you thought you could have. And it was never going to work that way.
I love the insurance companies like Blue Cross Blue Shield that are saying a procedure is experimental that's been being done for 20 years.
Sure, because it's the volume, right? So they have to pay out a lot of insurance payments on a procedure. They're going to try to cut that, you know? Or it goes cyclically. It's really interesting. When you're on the other side of the physician and you're seeing patients and you're billing and you're using certain codes, they'll change up how you're supposed to send that code in without telling you. This is how arbitrary it gets. Sometimes if you do a bilateral procedure, you should put it on two lines, left and right on two lines. Now some insurance companies ask you to put it on one line with a modifier and double the price on the actual payout line. Who knows that until you've billed wrong multiple months and you realize you're not getting any money, and then, because they don't tell you this, you don't get a letter, you can't call in and ask them, you just have to kind of figure it out by yourself. It's ridiculous. It's such a game, and it's an unwinnable game at this point. But I don't blame doctors for wanting to get out of the system and go fee for service. I'd rather give you a huge discount and get paid at the time of service than wait a year to get a pittance of what I charged. That's not worth it anymore. I think most doctors who are still in private practice are at the point that they, if they haven't already jumped and sold, that they feel so demoralized, so demeaned and degraded at this point that if they have any backbone left, they're running out of the system because it's untenable. Those are the doctors that carry what healthcare should be. You know, they are the future. And if patients go to these doctors, it doesn't matter what they talk about on these presidential debates. We don't have to wait for them to, you know, make up some sort of system that's going to have to be legislated in. We can do it now. There's no law against paying money out of pocket for health care. And if you use something like Liberty Health Share, you won't be fined. You won't pay a tax for the privilege. Play the game. The game is rigged. But there are little loopholes that hopefully my show is teaching you that you can use to bypass pitfalls so you can play this game and win it. They think that we're dumb. They think that we don't pay attention to anything. And they think if they can keep saying whatever they want, do the opposite, but because we have nowhere to go, this is the same principle. There's nobody else. What are you going to do? You have to do Obamacare. It's a mandate. Then you're stuck in the system. We're just going to tell you what you want to hear and then continue the same path. It's what they've been doing for 6 years. So if we decide, hey, there's an alternative, I can go direct primary care practice. I can go to a cash-based practice, whether that be a specialist or a primary care doctor, and I can use Liberty Health Share as an example of how I want to pay for it. Add in Aflac, Mutual Omaha, whatever supplemental insurance you want to choose, and have them cut you a check for getting a mammogram, a colonoscopy. God forbid you get admitted. Have them give you a check for $250,000 to cover your expenses, no questions asked. It doesn't matter what the insurance companies say. When you have your money in hand, you get to decide what hospital you want to go to, what doctor you want to see. God forbid you end up there. But that's the key. And you're paying a fraction. Play the game. Play it right. And you wouldn't have to have any stress anymore about, I went to the ER and I got a couple thousand dollar bill, which I'm going to be paying for the rest of my life. You don't have to go that route. You've got urgent cares all over the country. Here in Georgia, run by board-certified emergency medicine doctors, where it's a flat fee, $135 flat. If you go into any ER, you're going to come in with at least $500 just to walk in the door to sign your name. And they can actually help you. It's not happening anymore in the hospital space. If you go to the ER, they may stabilize you. Usually the diagnosis seems to be wrong for ENT. I've seen that multiple times. Just crazy diagnoses. And then they tell you to go they refer you to an ENT. So they don't even treat you. They kind of, I don't know what they do, they kind of triage you and then ship you out for care. But they charge you in the process. That's what the emergency rooms are doing. So I recommend urgent cares staffed by ER doctors who got fed up with that system and opened their own, and stay within that system, because they're going to send you to the doctors they trust, who are cash-based, who are independent, and that system is cheaper, more efficient, better care, old-fashioned care, where it's Hippocratic oath-driven, and your privacy is intact. It's a no-brainer, honestly. If you understand that, you've already reached halfway to being able to control your healthcare dollar and your body.
With that,
on that note, let's take a break.
You got it.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. Now, this is living in some interesting times, I think. I mean, and as we need to set ourselves up so that we are independent, self-sufficient, healthy, that, you know, that we have our affairs in order, because this, everything just seems to be chaotic. I mean, we talked in the break about what's going on in Europe. I believe it's coming here as well. I mean, there's only a matter of time before we start taking in various groups from this Middle East migrant population.
And Dr. George, let me ask you something. With what's going on in Europe, and you had mentioned Ebola earlier when we were off mic, but with what's going on in Europe, as we all know, or sort of know, you know, we have our own medical issues in the United States as far as diseases go. But, you know, we have a pretty good grasp on it. We certainly have the best doctors in the world. But as with this influx, things are different in Syria as opposed to London, as an example. What kind of diseases, you know, we could be looking at, I don't want to say the Black Plague, but in my opinion, we could be looking at national and international diseases being transmitted. Am I totally off base with that?
No, actually, there's an example. Somebody just died in Germany of the MERS virus. It's like the SARS virus, and I think that was in Asia. So mm-hmm. There's some sort of respiratory virus that's been sweeping the Middle East. And you have folks coming in from that area. No one's being checked. There is no... I mean, not only do you not know who they are because there's no ID, but there's no medical checks going on. The Ebola just rose again in Sierra Leone. They're quarantining 700 people. So you have now a fluid migrant population from areas that have endemic diseases like MERS. We talked about Ebola on the show in the past, and there's no checks on it. I mean, I just think it's unconscionable, to tell you the truth. And, you know, I understand you want to be there for other human beings. But again, somebody mentioned something that was really quite interesting. Why don't you carve out a safe zone within Syria or somewhere in that region and have everybody go there instead of this mass migrant population where, again, they're traversing, or, you know, areas where they're not wanted. There's violence happening. There's rapes happening. These migrant camps are festering, you know, with people who are becoming angrier and desperate, and they're going to take it out on whomever they can, each other and the population that's housing them or hosting them. This is not a situation that's healthy. I mean, immigration's fine when it's controlled. This is not an immigration. It's a migration, and it's completely different. And using the cover of children, 70% of the people in this migrant population are men, 72%. So they're not families. They're young men. And, you know, ISIS has already said, right, they're going to infiltrate this group and get them anywhere they need to get them. Nobody's checking any IDs. Most of them aren't from Syria, apparently. They're from everywhere else. So Libya. They're from other places. No one's checking anything. That's a problem. We have it here. What's the border? It's not the Mexican population that's the number one migrant or immigrant coming into our country. It's people from China. It's people from Africa. It's people from God knows where. And there's no border checks going on. We've already seen diseases hit here. Things like, we've seen dengue fever. We've seen, we're just drawing a blank on some of them, TB, multiple resistant tuberculosis. We've seen lots of viral processes come through. This is a problem. And the government is supposed to protect us. And that means people need to go through quarantine sometimes, get health checks before they're let into the general population. That's how it would happen in Ellis Island. And it had a purpose to it. Less than you want is somebody coming through with a communicable disease that nobody picks up. Next thing you know, it's run rampant and we can't control it. These are not, it's not about racist or ethics or whatever. It's about safety. And that should precede everything, in my opinion. You know, so this, everything's got consequences. Everything that's going on potentially affects us. That's why I'm saying you need to have your P's and Q's about you at this point. You know, do healthy things. Make sure you've got your healthcare dollar situated in such a way that you won't go bankrupt if something untoward happens. And you can do it. Until this Obamacare ever gets repealed, the system won't get easier to work with. It's going to get harder. And actually, I think 220,000 people or 2 million people, I can't remember how many the number is, but they've already dropped out of Obamacare. So they joined it. They figured out it didn't work. Now they're out of it. I mean, the system is ridiculous. I think 2 million, I think, is the number. So they had 9 million people join. 400,000 of them were not allowed to because they weren't citizens. They just wanted to pump up the number. Then you have the other people who were so expensive, they said, forget this, I'd rather pay the fine. And it's just a system that's completely untenable, unworkable. I think that the litmus test for anybody who wants to, any Republican who talks about repeal and replace, why don't they talk about just give rid of the mandate? You can't repeal this thing. It's not going to work. It's like an octopus with tentacles everywhere. But all you would have to do, if you were really honest about wanting to fix the system, is to get rid of the mandate. That would allow people the freedom to choose something else. That's what it's about. And those who don't like it will find another way. Liberty HealthShare, cash-based practices, they save their money and fund themselves. They wouldn't be paying to an insurance company where it just gets sucked into a black hole. And maybe if the system were smaller, maybe the government wouldn't have to cover so many people, so they could actually give better care to the people who are in the most desperate need, instead of trying to make everybody else transfer wealth from themselves into this system that's completely bankrupt. That's the truth. If we did that, that would work. And I would actually be looking at any candidate who would talk about get rid of the mandate. That's reasonable. And that's doable. Congress, forget that. Maybe executive order to get rid of the mandate. I'm sure you can't because it's got to be legislated in. But that would work. So you're still leaving Obamacare in place, but you've certainly taken one of the major foundation underpinnings out, and it'll fall on its own weight.
It'll be interesting tonight, while you're staying up watching the debates, to see if anything is said about Obamacare, or if they will. It wasn't brought up in the last debate, to my knowledge.
No.
And we sent some emails, and some other doctors have sent emails to the people that are going to, the CNN folks that are going to be handling the debate, to ask about Obamacare and the health insurance, what each of them would do, and we'll see whether they respond. It's amazing how it's fallen off the radar totally.
Well, not surprising, because it's become a personality contest, because those that have they're losing are all after the one candidate. But just be aware of it and be informed that when they talk about health savings accounts and tax credits as the answer, they have no idea what they're talking about. I mean, I mentioned this, I think I mentioned this before. If you look at how much money someone spends, an average is about $12,000 for an individual, about $25,000 for a family to cover a general insurance plan. Scott Walker's plan, for example, gives you a $900 tax credit. Give me a break. $900 tax credit probably wouldn't even cover your deductible. And for a family, $3,000 tax credit. It's a joke when you're paying $25,000 or more. So it sounds good, but in practicality, in practical terms, it doesn't do a thing. Talk about, you know, getting rid of the mandate. Talk about something that actually would help. You know, talk about allowing people to use their health savings accounts for direct primary care practices. That's something that's valuable. And in Florida, for example, they allow that now. I think they've legislated in their state legislature that if you have a direct primary care practice, you don't have to use your health savings account for insurance companies only, that it can be used for direct primary care. That means you can use your money for yourself. You take control of your pot of money. That's what they should be talking about. Get rid of the centralization. Get rid of the corporate control. Put it back in the hands of the patient, and by definition, the doctor. Because we're the ones who the system is supposed to be working for, but it's working against both of us at this point. It's got to stop. But if we don't do it, nobody will. People should read the book, my book, because I talk about this, and it's all laid out, how we got here, and more importantly, how we get out of it.
We got about 1 minute, and everybody should get a copy of your book. The title is?
Big Medicine, the Cost of Corporate Control, and How Doctors and Patients Working Together Can Rebuild a Better System. And you can get it on my website, you can get it at Kindle, you can get it on Amazon.com. So if you go to drlanagegeorge.com, you can actually, there's a link to take you to any of those places. And also, you should check out my Medicine on Call Facebook link on the vaccine index. And that gives you all of the actual studies, the number, the connections between autism, connections between low baby weight, problems with pregnancy and vaccines. It's really pretty amazing, and it's fast reading. So that's it.
That's it. And I hate to say it, but that's it for the show today. Dr. George, as always, thank you for being on America's Web Radio, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you. Have a good week, everybody.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.